Welcome everyone to episode 165 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we'll talk about all of the news that inconveniently broke right as I went on vacation. Apparently some guy named Kawhi Leonard got traded. I hear he's pretty good, so we'll talk about that for both Toronto and San Antonio. We'll also discuss Carmelo Anthony's tenure in OKC coming to a merciful end. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at AlmightyCasts. Joining me today, as always, and standing right next to me, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. Is it weird to be the host of this podcast in my home?
Yes, it certainly is. So yes, we are recording this live in Denmark. I am here for a couple days. Mort has been treating me very well. I've gained about 18 pounds in the past 24 hours, so that's great. But Copenhagen is a lovely city. For anyone who has not visited, you should come and... especially if things go bad in November 2020, let's all just migrate here.
Yeah, it's a pretty good alternative, isn't it? It's hot as hell, but...
yeah, that's fine. It's, you know, people in America are used to that.
Yeah.
So, naturally, the day I left for vacation, I woke up at 8:30, and I have a flight to Estonia at 2 o'clock, and I see the Woj bomb of all Woj bombs, that Kawhi Leonard has been traded to the Toronto Raptors. Apparently, this broke at some ungodly hour. Everyone was very mad about it. So, unfortunately, we couldn't record that day because my wife would have killed me if we missed our flight. Understandably so. So we let the dust settle a bit. And now we get to think through the implications for both San Antonio and Toronto. So, Mort, let's start from the San Antonio side of things. Why was this the package that the Spurs agreed to?
Well, apparently, they wanted something established. I don't think Pop wanted to go out on a rebuilding term. He wanted a star in there. He wanted to reach the playoffs one more time before he said goodbye. And DeMar DeRozan certainly gets them there. So I think he wanted something that was definitely more established and some star value, something that could be sold to the fan base as well. Like, we can sit here and argue all day long that the right path might have been younger players and draft picks. Mm-hmm. But in terms of talent, this might just have been the best package available. Like, I think a lot of people are just underestimating the value of DeMar DeRozan. Like, he's a good player. He's an all-NBA talent. So it's not like they didn't get anything for Kawhi. A lot of Spurs fans were a little bit sad that there weren't, you know, a proper first-round pick included. Mm-hmm. This is more or less a fake first-rounder or a very limited first-rounder.
Right.
But, I mean, I get it. I get what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I do as well. And we alluded to this in that, you know, we figured they weren't going to let Pop go out on a sour note. They weren't going to go plunge into an all-scale rebuild. So they were going to try to get this, you know, someone like a DeMar DeRozan, someone who's going to keep them competitive. They won, you know, 45-plus games last year. They're going to be in that 50-55 range again. They're probably going to make the playoffs, even though the West is really competitive. Yeah, they didn't get as much as you would have liked if you're a Spurs fan for the future. As you said, pretty much a fake first-round pick or a late first-rounder. Plus Jakob Poeltl, who's a good player, but there's no guarantee he develops into, you know, a top-five all-NBA player like Kawhi Leonard.
Or even a starter.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, they've got LaMarcus Aldridge, they have Pau Gasol. You figure at least for this year he's going to be coming off the bench. We'll see what happens with Pau next year because he only has a bit of his contract guaranteed. So, yeah, I mean, it's a move that, you know, Zach Lowe and you especially, and I understand why they were going this way, but, like, a lot of people were arguing, if you're trading Kawhi, you need to go into a full-scale rebuild.
Yeah.
They didn't do that, but then again, it's like, this is probably, if not Pop's last year, this year is probably done after the 2020 Olympics, so you're probably looking at two more years. Coincidentally, DeMar DeRozan is guaranteed to be under contract for two more years. It just feels like that's the way, you know, they know they're not in a position to get marquee free agents. Like, if they go into a rebuild, it's going to be a long time before they get a top-tier guy. So if they want to just continue going for that 50-55 wins and see what happens... I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think they're going the Paul Pierce route the Celtics used to go in back in the day. Like, they had one established star. They had a lot of young players.
Mm-hmm.
The Spurs don't really fit that criteria in terms of the young players. But when they have that established star, you can attract someone else later on.
Right.
So right now with DeMar DeRozan, like, he's an asset in more ways than just being a player. He's an asset in terms of how you're going to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
You can get guys in there looking to, like, make a run on some level. And if he flames out eventually, like, then you go into the fully fledged rebuild. I do like the fact that they're going for this last gasp sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like you alluded to, like, a rebuild in San Antonio would be like 10 years.
Yeah. Right. Unless you get lucky and get the number one pick.
But right.
Yeah. You're probably not looking at a quick turnaround once they do rebuild. So you alluded to it more. Let's talk about the fit with DeMar DeRozan in particular, because I know a lot of, you know, the immediate Twitter takes on that Wednesday when this news broke was like, oh my God, they're just going to shoot nothing but mid-range shots between DeMar and LaMarcus Aldridge. They're just going to set basketball back 20 years. Are you nervous about his fit there, or do you think, you know, the initial reaction was overblown?
A little bit overblown, but I will say I'm not fully confident about the fit. I mean, even though DeMar is starting to shoot more threes, LaMarcus as well for that matter, like, they are not natural three-point shooters. They are very much heavy in the mid-range area.
Yep.
That's going to continue. Here's the thing, though. The Spurs are just so excellent at getting high-quality mid-range shots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fair. Like, you can actually go a certain extent to that. I think it's overblown with the fact that nowadays it has to be solely layups and threes.
Right.
Like, you can actually build a playoff team by utilizing the mid-range area as long as you do it efficiently and you have a proper defense set on the other end.
Right.
Like, okay, the defense is not going to be as great.
Yeah.
Because Kawhi, obviously, is, like, maybe one of the best defenders of all time.
Yeah.
So, losing that is huge.
And obviously. Danny Green.
And Danny Green as well. Like, you can't really switch the same way that you could before.
Right.
So, offensively, there's absolutely concern.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what they're trying to do by not matching Kyle Anderson as well.
Like, yeah.
That was a weird one for me.
Right.
Like, he seemed to be productive, young. Like, you could squeeze out more potential for that guy.
Yeah.
Not really sure how they're going to fix these lacks that they have now. It's going to be a fine team. It's just not going to be anything overwhelming.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment of how this season's going to go. I can't think of what their rotation is going to be. And that's not a good thing to be able to say about a team, you know, 3 months before the season. But, like, you're going to start Murray at the point. You're going to have DeMar presumably at the two. I guess Rudy Gay at the three.
Yeah.
And then LaMarcus and Powell. But then the bench feels a little flimsy. We still don't know about Manu, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We know.
The Manu retirement watch continues. We'll see what happens there. But, you know, they feel flimsy outside of that starting five. And Rudy Gay, knock on wood, he stays healthy, but if he doesn't, I don't know, do they slide DeMar over to the three? Like, the rotation, we'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
But
you forgot about Dante Cunningham, the big-ass signing they did.
Big blockbuster signing of the summer, yeah. I mean, I think what you said, I'm not as worried as the initial Twitter reaction, especially because DeMar started shooting threes. Like, yeah, he's not a high-volume guy, he's not especially efficient. But they do have Chip there. If anyone can teach him how to become a better shooter, it is Chip. And, you know, I like, put enormous faith into Popovich. You've argued this before, that he's worth, you know, 10, 15 wins on his own, if not more.
Yeah, I think I argued 20 to 30.
Yeah. So, like, there is a non-zero chance that DeMar DeRozan has his best ever year in San Antonio, because he gets to work with Chip on his shot. He gets to be coached by Pop, who's, you know, a living legend. So, yeah, like, on paper, this roster seems like a questionable fit. And, you know, as you said, this is not, doesn't lend itself to Morey ball at all.
It's
the exact opposite of Morey ball.
It's Bulls ball.
Yeah.
With like Rondo and Wade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I will always give Greg Popovich the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yeah. And again, like, talent, I feel, trumps everything.
Yeah.
I really do feel that.
Right.
Like, unlike the Bulls with Rondo and Wade, like, the talent level wasn't there for those guys anymore.
Yeah.
They were just so old. DeMar is in his prime. What is he, like 28?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah, like he's in his absolute prime physically.
Right.
He's a very smart player. I don't think we give him enough credit. Like, as a playmaker, he's really good.
Right.
Like, he'll find these weird angles and throw passes that are really weird, but efficient. Like, he's a good guy. And a good guy as well. I mean, personally as well.
Yes.
Like, from everything we hear privately as well, like, he's just a real stand-up guy.
Right.
And given how Kawhi left things in San Antonio, that might just be what the doctor ordered.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine having DeMar come in and just embrace the San Antonio culture and the franchise and the fans?
Yeah.
Like, I think fans in San Antonio right now are just going to love this guy.
Yeah.
Even though they're, you know, sour about the return.
Right.
It's the whole breakup thing. But I don't think they're going to look at DeMar as a rebound type of dude. Like, they are going to embrace him big time. And I think that carries tremendous weight during the regular season.
I completely agree. Yeah, I think they'll latch on very quickly to him.
And Sarah was already...
Yeah.
Very keen.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And as you said, you know, I think they're just sour about how this Kawhi thing went down. You can feel bad about that, but you can also enjoy DeMar, who he is. And like, as you said, he's in his prime right now. LaMarcus Aldridge, like, he catches a lot of shit, but he was also excellent last year.
He's good.
Yeah. Like, they have two all-star caliber players, and then Pau is, you know, on the back end of his career, but he's still a good player. He's not good defensively, but he's...
Right. Maybe he's the guy who should come off the bench and then maybe start Jakob Poeltl.
At the five, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
not?
Actually,
he's a shot blocker, he's a rebounder, and if one thing Poeltl knows, it's his role.
Yeah.
Like, did you see his field goal percentage last year?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, that was no coincidence. He just understood, I'm not the guy who has to take like a step back 15-footer.
Yeah.
I'm the guy who rolls to the rim, I'm going to wait for the lob, I'm going to wait for the pass right in the dunker spot, and I'm going to go get it.
Yeah.
Like, he was really efficient because he just understood good shot selection for his, you know, his limitations.
Right.
And, like, let's be honest here for a second. Having a guy who has a deep understanding of his own game combined with Greg Popovich, that can be beautiful.
It could be very dangerous, yeah. And he'll be a lower usage guy on offense, which you'll probably want next to DeMar and LaMarcus, and then, you know, better defensively. Yeah, that's actually... I'm going to guess... Pau gets the nod at the start of the year just because veteran and, you know,
Spurs thing.
Yeah. Right. But, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Jakob moves into the starting lineup at some point this year. So we already touched on this a little bit, but just in general, what do you think this move and the willingness to move on from Kawhi in general, but, like, you know, again, this package of DeRozan, Poeltl, and a very heavily protected first-round pick, what does it signal about the Spurs' future?
Well, just that they're trying something else. Really, yeah. I mean, look, they're going for something right now. I don't know if they are trying to, like, go for a ring. I mean, obviously they're trying to win something, but I think they're realistic. I don't think they go into this season going, we have a squad that can beat Golden State.
Right.
But I think they want to go in and show a level of competitiveness that they may not have had last season by missing Kawhi Leonard. So they, like I mentioned earlier, like, end on a high note in case Pop decides to retire or Mono decides to retire.
Yeah.
We'll see. I just want them to be competitive, and I want them to look ahead to the future still. Like, I know it's not popular to play both sides of that field, but if I feel confident in the Spurs to do virtually everything.
Yeah.
So it's not a problem.
Right, and Boston's been playing that side, both sides of that field for years, and look how it turned out.
It's going pretty well. Now they finally seem to be cashing in, though.
Right.
Like, now it's not the time where they're looking at the future as assets. Like, they cashed in with Kyrie.
Yeah.
And they're re-signing Marcus Smart, not letting him go. It seems like now they're trying to just use all those assets to get significantly better.
Yeah. Well, the window is open now that LeBron's gone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, before we move to Toronto, actually, let's talk about the other teams in this race, because, you know, Boston was rumored to be interested, Philly was rumored to be interested, the Lakers were rumored to be interested. None of them were willing to dangle the marquee pieces that they could offer. Like, I think Zach Lowe was the one who reported for Philly that the Spurs were saying you have to include not only Markelle Fultz may not even be in those conversations, it was you have to include Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid.
Right.
And Philly rightfully told them to fuck off. Boston refused.
But I respect the ask.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, you might as well. I mean, don't start low. And then Boston refused to include, like, any of their top guys. Irving, Hayward, Horford, Brown, Tatum. Just for argument's sake. Probably Rozier too. Just for all the time's sake.
Do you understand why they didn't want to include Gordon Hayward? Because, like, let's be honest. That injury...
Yeah.
is frightening as all hell, and he's on a huge contract.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that. I think he'll be okay. I would have been more willing to offer Kyrie than I would Hayward.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because okay. I think Kyrie's leaving after this year.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't think the Spurs would have wanted Kyrie, because I think they also know he was gone. And, like, that's just
imagine Kawhi instead of Hayward, though.
Yeah.
With Kyrie there, just for that one season.
Yeah.
That would have been the favorite, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, regardless of who they traded. And then the Lakers, too, like, they reportedly didn't offer Ingram, which, again, makes sense. For the Lakers seem like they're just confident in being able to sign him in 2019.
We saw how that
with Paul George.
Yeah.
But do you think Boston and Philly screwed up by not topping this offer?
Well, that depends on the return, obviously.
Yeah.
They could top this offer, but if that included, like, a Joel Embiid or Ben Simmons, obviously
right.
no.
Right.
I probably would have at least considered Fultz.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, Kawhi's camp, specifically his uncle, really mm-hmm. seems to be pushing some buttons on Kawhi himself and really, directing his entire future.
Right.
And I don't want that cloud hanging over Philly.
Yeah.
And to some extent, Boston as well. But I feel Boston was in a better spot to be able to afford a one-year gamble.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious as why they didn't get into that.
Yeah. It, as you said, it depends on what the Spurs were asking. I don't think we've heard, at least I haven't seen, because I've been offline for basically a week. I don't think we've seen, like, a specific trade demand from the Spurs to Boston. Like, were they saying you have to include Tatum and Brown? Because in that case,
right?
No, absolutely not. Or even Tatum, I think you probably don't do it.
Yeah.
But just Brown? Because of, yeah, Brown. Yeah, and Zach Lowe had a great column about that. I agree, especially, the years of team control is the argument in favor of Brown. Like, Kawhi is a better player than Brown, but if you're not confident in your ability to re-sign him and you're not confident he's healthy and you have Jaylen Brown, who, at least 6 more years, probably 7, that you're guaranteed to have him, I understand. And the same thing for Fultz. I wrote a piece about it, I think, for B-Ball Breakdown. I don't remember. But that was the argument, too, is, like, you're weighing 6 or 7 years of team control versus one. Now, if the Spurs were willing to take the package, the reported package of Covington, Saric, and the 2021 Miami first-round pick, I don't know that I actually know that does not make them more competitive than the package they took. So if that's they were weighing, I get why they went this route. If I were the Spurs, I would have at least been weighing that a little bit more. Like, because at least that Miami pick could be very good. Saric is just so young. Like, he seems like he's going to... I don't think we've seen the best of him yet by any means.
Oh, yeah. No. He's going to be a lot better. I think people are sleeping on Saric. Like,
I agree.
I saw some of the reactions to, like, Saric's name being included, like, in Kawhi trade proposals.
Yeah.
People were like, why? That's just Dario Saric is, like, just... throw in. Like,
right.
No, this guy is a fully fledged NBA starter who's already at this point a fringe all-star caliber, if you understand my meaning. Like,
right,
he's just one small step from being, like, in the all-star conversation. I don't know why people are sleeping on him. Like, he can handle the ball. He's a tremendous passer at the power forward position.
Yep.
He can shoot. He's not one of those guys who doesn't rebound.
Right.
Like, he rebounds aggressively.
Yeah.
And his defense, it's a little bit shaky and it's inconsistent. But when it's there, it's meaningful and it's impactful.
Yeah.
I feel people are sleeping so much on Saric.
I think that he just falls under the radar because you have the, like, Simmons and Embiid just took up so much attention. And then the false weirdness took up a lot more attention. So Saric is just kind of that, like...
And he's Euro.
Yeah, right.
Obviously.
He's Euro.
You know,
and
Luka Doncic is not a good player because he's Euro. Same thing with Saric, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's a glue guy, basically, in Philly. Yeah. But, like, had he gone to San Antonio, I think he could have developed into that all-star caliber player next season. Like, I think he is...
Pop would have loved him.
Yeah, I know. He felt so Spursy.
Yeah.
I'm, like, almost just sad for Spurs fans that he couldn't go. But
you know what he is? He's the new generation of Luis Scola.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, yeah.
Like, just fundamentally sound in every aspect. Like, I know Scola wasn't a great defender, but, I mean, he was at least competitive on that. Like, he tried.
Yeah.
He just didn't stand still and not try.
Right.
Like, he gave it everything. And I even heard certain NBA players, like, you know, one of the hardest guys to go up against, Louis Scola, because he would mug you. Like,
right.
He wouldn't have the greatest like defensive understanding, but he would at least fight the living shit out of you.
And he would have all those like crafty finishes under the basket.
Oh, yeah, the little scoop.
Yeah, that you have no idea. And like Saric has the same thing. Like, it doesn't look good, but like it just works.
It's effective.
It's like not seamless. He doesn't. It just seems like kind of goofy, but somehow he makes it work. So yeah, I mean, I hesitate, as you said. I think it depends on like what the Spurs were demanding from Philly and Boston. If it really was Simmons or Embiid for Kawhi, that should have ended the conversation right there.
Right.
Even like Fultz was my breaking point, I think, just because of the team control, and then Boston as well. It's just like, I don't know what unless it was Brown, unless it was just Kawhi for Brown straight up. But I, you know, given what they got, I think that's not.
No, it's a fine.
Yeah.
It's a fine return. I do have a problem with the top 20 protected 2022 first rounder because it becomes two second rounders if it's not conveyed.
Right.
It will convey.
Yeah.
But I have a problem with it not being like just further protected for another year or two. Like then you could say, okay, then it's a top 15 protected in 2023.
Right.
Like, I think it's a problem that it breaks into two second rounders if not conveyed.
Yeah.
I don't think necessarily that would have been a deal breaker.
Yeah.
Because it's Kawhi Leonard.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That was the part. Like, you would have liked a better pick. Yeah. Or at least, as you said, like, one that had a better chance of conveying as even a mid first rounder or like top 10 protected eventually.
Yeah. But it is going to convey.
Yeah.
I think.
I would assume.
I can't imagine it won't be. Unless, of course, Kawhi Leonard decides that he's going to sit out, which is a weird rumor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That is not going to be true.
No, it is not.
Yeah. Hey, so, let me sit out 2 years.
Yeah, right.
And then go get a max contract
exactly.
After having not played for 24 months.
Yeah, I'm sure that's really going to inspire a lot of confidence.
Oh, yeah.
So let's move into the Toronto side of things now. Like, how do you not love this for Toronto, right?
Yeah. I mean, look. All right. So I just spent 10 minutes just praising DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
And I maintain all of that. But here's the thing. His contract is extremely large.
Yep.
So even if, you know, Kawhi leaves next summer and you start to sort of a rebuild, you got out of DeMar DeRozan's contract.
Yep.
You know, as great as he is, that's just a lot of money.
Yeah.
So this just makes a rebuilding process, if it comes to that, so much easier.
Right.
But I love it for a different reason as well. So we've heard several times over that Toronto is one of those teams that really treats its staff well. Like the staff around like their players are routinely the best compensated, financially speaking, staff in the entire NBA. People love it there.
Yeah.
And it's apparently very easy to fall in love with that organization.
Yep.
Look no further than DeMar DeRozan.
Right.
Who was just absolutely destroyed by being traded, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah.
So I think if there's a team where that Kawhi could fall in love with that isn't the Spurs, like usually we use the Spurs as the argument here.
Right, right.
But then it's Toronto.
Yeah.
Like he will have a whole country to himself, essentially. The thing is, and this is a great point, like if Kawhi really wants LA, right? There was a tweet the other day, I don't know if you saw it because you've been busy.
Yeah, you know, probably being, not.
Yeah. Basically saying, if Kawhi was actually at times forced by media relations people to give answers to questions.
Oh, yeah.
Like he would routinely just give one word replies to reporters. Like he has very little to say. You know, we joke around about Kawhi being quiet and stuff, but it's actually a problem.
Right.
To the point where you have to get personnel involved, like to tell him, look, you're contractually obligated to speak.
Right.
So what's the idea here if he wants to go to LA and be like a marketing mogul? You can't be like, look, the era of silent films are over.
Yeah.
They ended in 1919.
Right.
So I'm not really sure what the hell he's trying to do.
I'm not either. I know that. I think I even tweeted that before I left because there was I think it was in the Woj story that said something along the lines of like, he wants to go to LA, but he also wants to avoid like media scrutiny and a spotlight. And it's like, what do you think's going to happen? Every LeBron James team turns into a circus.
Yeah.
LeBron James on the Lakers is 10 times of a circus.
Right.
And then if Lonzo Ball is still there and Voldemort's still there, it's just going to be an absolute shit show. Like, what do you think is going to happen?
And even if he goes to the Clippers, he's not going to get away from that.
Right. Because then it's going to be like you're on the rival team of LeBron. You're going to be the two competing stars in L.A. there's no, if he is really as quiet as rumored and as like reluctant to speak to the media as rumored, Toronto is actually perfect for him.
Yeah, it's Canada. Like,
right, and they're like a really good team. I mean, they were the number one seed in the East, and like no one really pays attention to them during the season. No offense, Raptors fans, but like,
yeah,
it's right. Like, you know, Boston and Philly were dominating most of the conversation in the Eastern Conference, and Cleveland, obviously.
Right.
But like, it's the same thing would have happened and probably will happen. Like, there will be a lot of focus on the Raptors at first just because
Kawhi's
new, and like, we just want to see how it works. And then if they hit a groove, if they get off to like a 16-4 start, it's going to be like, oh, great, okay. We'll check back in with you in April, and we'll see if you can get over this weird playoff.
Exactly. And you know who else was quiet initially when he got there? Vince Carter.
Ooh, yeah.
He was quiet too, and like a lot of people were like, oh, Vince in Canada? Because at that point in time, the Raptors were just not an attractive location.
Right.
But Vince kind of grew into himself there. Like he discovered, oh, you know, the Raptors fans are hardcore. And they are.
Yeah.
Like, they have to be one of the most passionate fans. They are.
Yeah.
They are.
I mean, like, yeah, they're up there at least.
Yeah. And they're top three at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they're so passionate about it. And like, he grew to love that.
Yes.
And I think Kawhi, to some extent, will have an opportunity to develop on his own merits there, like in his own pace.
Mm-hmm.
The problem just, again, it's the goddamn uncle.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
If he forces Kawhi, like, what if Kawhi absolutely loves it in Toronto, but that uncle is in his ear and go, no, you don't love it.
Yeah, love it. right.
Like, it's just, it's weird.
I think
it's a weird situation. But yeah, like, you asked me how you couldn't love it from, or how could you not love it for Toronto?
Right. I
mean, look, let's assume Kawhi stays.
Yeah.
Or let's just focus on this year alone, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
Look, he's so much better than DeRozan, and that's all respect to DeRozan.
Right.
But, like, he's just on another level. A fully healthy Kawhi Leonard is a top five NBA player.
Yes.
And what have we been saying all along about the Raptors? They need a lead guide.
Yeah.
Here's what's kind of sad, though. The moment they get a LeBron killer,
I know, LeBron leaves.
He goes to the West. Like, yeah, that's just not. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Now it could be a Tatum killer, or a Hayward killer, or a Simmons killer.
Oh God, Kawhi against Tatum.
It's gonna be
in the
fun.
Playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Jason Tatum, but I think he's gonna be eaten alive.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched too many of these pure sweat videos during the summer, and I'm seeing how good Tatum looks. And
he's fantastic.
Yeah,
but it's
Kawhi,
Kawhi.
I know Kawhi I mean, is yeah.
Like, if there's a guy who can make Tatum look like, as a human being,
right?
It's Kawhi.
Just swallow his life up. But yeah, but then Boston has so many other guys. Like,
they do, but like that specific lineup.
Yeah.
But do you think they're the favorites of coming out of the East, or is that still Boston? Because I'm leaning Boston still.
I am too, but like we should also mention, like, Danny Green in this trade is not just a throw-in.
Oh yeah.
Like, Danny Green's going to be a big part of that team. I feel like Spurs fans. Well, they're just so fiercely loyal to every player. So, like, most of them still love him. I think there was a subsect that got frustrated with him because he's much like Robert Covington in Philly. He's just, like, so streaky. And when he's on, he's, like, really on. And you just have confidence in every shot. And then when he's off, he is really off.
At least offensively.
Right.
Defensively, he's an asset all the time. But, yeah, like, his shot-making comes and goes.
And it's the same thing with Covington. He's really good defensively no matter what. But, like, offensively, it's just so streaky. But, like, add Green as a defender and then Kawhi as, like, this all-world defensive player of the year caliber player to a Toronto team that already has Lowry, that has Ibaka, that has Valanciunas in the starting lineup. Like,
bench.
Are we assuming Green starts?
I don't know. I mean, I probably... Like, let's think about that.
Because
who started at the three for Toronto? Like, OG. Uchi and Anunoby. It's kind of shame not to keep starting him, but like he has to sit. Like he can't play the two.
Right,
like, he's too big.
Yeah, and like, do you need him? I mean, Kawhi just fills. Kawhi like merges DeRozan's offensive game with OG's,
exactly,
and then is better than both of those guys respectively.
And you can't play OG off a spot in the starting lineup because you can't put Serge on the bench because that will kill his confidence entirely.
Right,
and you put so much stock into Valanciunas lately.
Yeah,
so if you slide back up to the five and put Jonas on the bench, like that's. he checks out.
Right.
Because he's tired of being jerked around.
Yeah.
So that's not going to work. I think Ochi is going to go to the bench.
I agree. Yeah, I think it's going to be like the Lowry. Bench would be... The starting lineup will be Lowry, Danny Green, mm-hmm. Kawhi, Ibaka, Valanciunas. The bench will be Fred VanVleet, D'Lon Wright, OG, CJ Miles. Or actually, CJ Miles at the 3, OG at the 4.
Right.
And then Pascal.
Siakam. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Siakam at the 5.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Like, they once again have another, like, much like last year, they have a 10-deep team. They're going to, like, they can just go bench mob again, except now you add OG to the bench mob.
Right. And the 3-point, we are sleeping on the 3-pointer for Toronto.
Yeah.
Like, they were good last year, but this is going to be insane because you replaced DeMar with essentially Kawhi and Danny Green.
Right.
And you take OG out, who's a low-volume shooter. Mm-hmm. Like, he goes to the bench. He can still hit the occasional corner three.
Right.
But you have CJ Miles there whole stretch.
Yep.
So you actually have Kyle Lowry, who's a bomber.
Yep.
Danny Green, who's a bomber. Yep. Kawhi Leonard, who's a bomber. Serge Ibaka can hit the three. Jonas is actually starting to hit the three. Then you have Fred VanVleet coming off the bench. He can hit the three.
Mm-hmm.
You have D'Lon Wright, who's starting to become a three-point shooter as well. Ochi can hit a little bit. CJ, obviously.
Right.
And Siakam is a developing shooter, but like, so Siakam is actually the least, oh my God, that's insane. Like, that's 10 players. That's 10 rotation players who can all, like, seriously hit the three.
Right.
That's two five-out, you know, units.
Yeah. They're going to, like,
I hadn't even thought about that. That's insane.
Nick Nurse has his work cut out for him finding, like, this whole regular season is just going to be, like, figuring out which five-man groups work best.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to keep the starters as one and a bench unit as one? Can you merge the two? I think he'll tinker around. But, like, that's the thing. And, you know, going back to this question of are they the favorite in the East, I don't know if they are. I still think I have Boston up there as well. But I think they're clearly – I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they're the number one seed again. And I think they're clearly ahead of Philly now.
Yeah.
I just think they have so much versatility. Like, I, you know, I am a Philly guy. I hope it's Toronto-Boston.
You are.
But I hope it's Toronto-Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that would just be so much. Like, both teams just have so much versatility now.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the most entertaining matchup. And I frankly think that's probably the most entertaining matchup. I guess Toronto and Warriors and Boston Warriors will be good. But, like, I think the Warriors are so much better than everyone in the West.
Yeah.
Whereas Toronto-Boston is going to be, like, pretty closely matched. Like, I think that, you know, we always called the Western Conference Finals last year were the real finals. Like, the Eastern Conference Finals this year won't be the real finals because they're playing the Warriors. But it's going to be, like, possibly,
intense.
It could be, like, the best matchup of the playoffs if it's Toronto-Boston.
And here's the thing. Having two units that can hit the three also gives them so much swing in their games. Like, they could win a series if they get hot.
Right.
Like, having that flexibility or having that potential, that just stretches your overall potential.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you just get hot for a couple games even, like, that can swing several games.
And you're not going to miss 27 straight threes, most likely.
Because you have Kawhi.
Right.
By the way, I was just watching some Kawhi videos the other week from the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Where he was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, that, we never talk about that because he's so quiet and because he played in San Antonio. We're always like, oh, LeBron and Steph and all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just an assassin
in
games.
Yeah.
Like, the way that he plays both ends, like, he's, I don't even think he saves himself. Like, he plays hard during games,
mm-hmm.
but Pop just had the presence of mind of sitting him going into, like, the fourth and stuff like that. So he came in, you know, really fresh. And he would have these 10-minute... you know, intervals where he just played balls out on both ends.
Yep.
He would make clutch buckets and he'll go guard the best wing player. Make clutch bucket, go guard the best wing player. That's right. Insane. Like, there was a reason I was on the Kawhi Leonard for MVP wagon last year, and I didn't know he would miss, like, practically all year. So,
right.
But I mean, he's that type of player.
Yeah.
And God, they really needed that.
Yeah.
They needed a different approach.
Right. Now, like, yeah, even if they devolve into their usual, like, crunch time isolation,
mm-hmm.
there's a difference between a DeMar DeRozan isolation and a Kawhi Leonard isolation.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because DeMar, I feel, is, you know, I know he struggles with depression,
mm-hmm.
but I still view him as very mentally strong personally.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Whereas on the court, he's not that mentally strong.
Mm-hmm.
And Kawhi, it's the opposite. Like,
yeah.
Because he's letting his uncle boss him around.
Right,
so he's not mentally strong off the court.
Mm-hmm.
But on the court, like, his confidence level is just, that's in one of those rare categories, like LeBron, Michael, those guys.
Yeah.
Like, he has zero doubt about himself when he steps on the court. I think maybe, I'm just, you know, this is, I'm not obviously a psychologist or anything, but I think the court represents a place where he can actually just shut himself off from the world, which he likes. Like, we know that.
Right.
And he can just focus on what he loves.
Yeah. Well, I think, and also I'm guessing, like, the start of his career, having to not shoulder a huge load, being able to play in the finals early, match up with LeBron, like...
And win that matchup.
Yeah, like, outplay LeBron in 2014. Like, I think that gave him the confidence to be like, oh, shit, I'm actually... Like, you know, he didn't need, like, a 10-year period. Like, Kevin Durant is still, like, insecure about how good he is. Or he was until he got to the Warriors, at least.
Yeah, now he seems a little bit more...
Right.
Yeah.
But, like, he said, you know, I went to the Warriors to find out how good I was, basically. Like, Kawhi doesn't have that problem. Kawhi knows, like, when healthy, I am a top 5 player. I can beat any player in this league, including LeBron James, in the finals. Mm-hmm. Like, I am that good. So, yeah, like, Toronto having that type of weapon... I mean, they're going to be so much fun to watch. Like, we joke about how no one pays attention to them from December until April. Like, this is the year. If you're going to give the Raptors a chance, I'm sad because we were on the Raptors bandwagon last year and it blew up in our faces so hard. We're back on the Raptors bandwagon this year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I will say, it's kind of funny because, you know, here in Denmark, you have, or at least you had, a fairly strong Raptors fan base, you know, in the early 2000s because of Vince.
Okay, and
like,
yeah.
Because, you know, also the Raptor thing. Like,
sure.
Dinos are cool.
Yeah.
I know the, you know, Americans look at that a little bit differently, and a lot of Canadians are like, no, let's just call them the Huskies and move on. And I get it. But it seems in recent years, like, over here, the Raptors fan base have kind of dropped off.
Mm-hmm.
And I do suspect that it's because of lack of coverage.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't get a lot of TV games over here as well.
Right.
So, like, yeah. I think it's time that we as an NBA community start to pimp the Raptors a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's... I mean, and also, like, let's not knock them because they're Canadian. Canada right now is probably a better country than...
Yeah. Yeah. So, if anything, they should automatically be anointed NBA champions.
Right. Just for political reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, let's switch gears now. Well, we need to talk about the other big trade that happened while I was on vacation. This one we saw coming, at least in the sense that Carmelo Anthony was destined to be moved at some point, whether traded, waived, stretched, whatever. OKC found the taker, the Atlanta Hawks. They also got Philly involved, so it was a 3-team deal in which Anthony is going to Atlanta. Philly is also sending Justin Anderson to Atlanta. Dennis Schroeder and Timothy Luau-Cabarro are going to OKC, and then Mike Muscala is going to Philly. So let's talk about it briefly for all three teams.
Right.
Let's start with OKC. I mean, obviously, the big incentive was just get off of Carmelo's contract. They saved, according to Woj, it was like more than $61 million in luxury tax payments, and then another $11 million in salary.
Yep.
So that was a no-brainer. How do you think Schroeder is going to fit in OKC, though? Because clearly he's got Russell Westbrook there. He's most likely coming off the bench. Do you think he's going to be an asset for them, or do you think he's going to be kind of a head case going from, you know, starting, playing 35-plus minutes, taking every shot he wants? Now he has to have a dialed-back role.
Yeah, I'm not really confident about him in OKC. He is a head case. Mm-hmm. I mean, we heard some stuff.
Yeah.
Privately,
right,
about a certain German also in the NBA.
Oh, yes.
Who did not want him on his team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty interesting how he just kind of lately, over the last year and a half, just became weird.
Yeah, like he so fell out of favor with Atlanta.
They were desperate. They were absolutely desperate to dump him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, to answer your question, I have no idea. It depends entirely on the kind of mindset he brings to the team. Like, when he reports to training camp, if his mind is right, I could actually... This is a talent infusion. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, let's not, you know, crap on his game. Like, we can crap on the personality and his issues. But, like, his game is solid to some extent. Like, he's got a bad shot selection, all that.
Yep.
But here's the thing. He's got great mechanics.
Yep.
He's athletic. He's really, really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he struggled defensively,
yeah,
all the tools are there. It's just a question of putting it together.
Yeah.
And even his passing is actually pretty fluent and good.
Yeah.
It's just a question of him realizing, oh, I'm not as good as I think I am.
Right.
And I need to actually work my ass off to get to that level where I think I am at in my head because I'm not there.
Right.
Like, when I look at Dennis Schroeder, all I see is a guy who's like 40% of the way to the guy he could be.
Yeah.
And I know that people are like, oh, but he scores 20 a game. No, don't look at stats. When I say that, I'm not looking at stats.
Right.
I'm looking at the way he plays.
Yeah.
Like, he will do something that is just objectively awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Then he'll follow that up with three or four just completely boneheaded plays.
Yeah.
Like, if you remove those from the equation, like, you can still afford a boneheaded play once in a while. Just look at Russell Westbrook.
Right.
And that's more than one.
Right.
That's more than two as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can afford that as long as you just continue your streak of making good, you know, good fundamental decisions.
Yeah.
Which he just does not.
Right.
And I wonder if OKC is the best environment. Because he's going to look at Russell Westbrook.
I know.
And he's going to go, oh, I can do that too.
Yeah, I know.
And like, no, Dennis. Sweetie, no. Right. And by the way, why have we not thrown around Dennis the Menace?
Oh, that's a good one.
Like,
it's, yeah.
That's so fitting right now.
It's probably going to be his thing, especially like when... Yeah, when he has one game where he, like, throws it away for OKC, that'll be the headline on the Oklahoman. Just like
Dennis the Menace. Yeah,
Mr.
I love that.
Unreliable for Kevin Durant.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not super pumped on the fit. Like, I have a bunch of concerns as well, but I could see it working out. There's a world in which, like, he could be, you know, the bench scorer they needed. Like, last year, their starting lineup was so good and their bench was just completely anemic. Like, if he embraces that sixth man role, like, it doesn't matter for him. Like, he's got three more years on his contract. He's getting like 16-17 million a year.
Right.
Like, he doesn't need to worry about putting up stats. He's not in a contract year. Like, you're getting paid either way, Dennis. Like, if you're putting up 12 points a game, that's fine. You're still making the same amount of money either way.
Yeah.
But then he could embrace, like, that Lou Williams role where he's just microwave scorer off the bench.
Same physical profile, same strength. So, yeah, it's just obvious, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, his as you said, the shot selection is going to be a big question. But then again, like, the OKC's bench is still not... Offensively, they need that spark plug.
Let's just say it out loud. They are not offensively competent.
Right. Because, like...
That's a really horrific offensive lineup.
Yeah.
Off the bench.
Right. Like, I'm assuming... Like, I've been going through this because I'm writing about OKC and, like, how I just... You know, I've talked about it on this podcast before. Just right now, their defense is poised to be incredible next year. Like, top five, if not top three. So I think it's going to be...
not some one.
Yeah, I'm going to always give it to Utah.
Yeah, I get that, but they could get there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like, I'm assuming it's going to be Russ, Roberson, George, probably Patrick Patterson in the starting lineup, just for spacing reasons.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Unless Jeremy Grant shows a three-point shot in training camp, which came, like, game over.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that would be good.
But I'm getting, at least to start the year, we can see Jeremy, and, like, we'll see a bunch of mixing. But so
Steven Adams.
Him at the four, and then Adams at the five. And then it's, like, Schroeder... Two and three, I don't know. Probably, like, Abrines and then...
Terrence Ferguson.
Yeah, maybe him. Like, they got Luau Cabarro as well, so, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They'll all see minutes. I have zero confidence in any of those guys. And then you'll have Grant at the four and Nerlens at the five.
Yeah.
But even if it's Grant at the four and Nerlens at the five, like, neither of those guys you're relying on.
Mm-mm.
So, like, there is a road in which Schroeder can be... You know, Russ takes a rest at the end of the first quarter... Schroeder comes in and just runs the team for the next 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, he could be a very good asset there. And as you said, he's been, like, metrics-wise, he has been horrendous defensively, I think, for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
There's 1 year in Atlanta where he was actually pretty good. So, like, you're right. The tools are there. The athleticism's there. The physical profile's there. He just needs to focus in on that end. But I feel like Billy Donovan from training camp onward needs to be, like, defense is our identity.
Yeah.
Like, we have Russ, we have Paul George, like, Schroeder, we have guys who can score. We need to make our impact. We have a bunch of, like, long, rangy athletes.
Yeah.
We need, like, if we're going to beat Golden State, we need to beat their ass on defense.
Yeah.
So I think Schroeder could be a valuable weapon in that if he embraces that role.
Mm-hmm. Or he could go get hot dogs with Durnos and
Yeah, right. There. Yeah, that's the question. But
oh,
like,
God, that's a horrendous, like, potential there. Negative potential. Like, him and Nerlens?
Yeah.
Ooh, boy.
I know.
both feeling underappreciated mm-hmm. while actually not having the games to back up their own self-worth.
But Nerlens at least needs to be on his best behavior because he's, in theory, in a contract year.
He's where Dennis is going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably.
Maybe that's good. Like, Nerlens will just be like, even though he's just 24, he'll look, young fella. Look at where I am. Look at where I'm at. Right. I turned down $80 million.
Oh my god.
Don't be like me. Don't be like me.
Poor Nerlens. Yeah. But I'm really excited. I'm officially embracing OKC as my Western Conference team. If only because they've got like half. It's like just now process West. Yeah.
That's why I had like Minnesota.
With Jimmy Butler. Right.
Yeah.
Your Minnesota had a little bit better version of it. Like the Timberwolves are a little bit better than like OK process, which is just like a bunch of cast offs. But I'm excited. I really do. I'm high on this Thunder team. Like this is addition by subtraction, if only because Melo was just so bad really on both ends last year. Like, you know, he's never really gave a shit on defense, but like offense, he was just so bad because he just didn't really embrace the role, as he said, and like he just had a higher vision of what he could be at this point of his career, whereas a guy like Patrick Patterson, he's still, I think, a 37% career three-point shooter.
Yeah, he can do some damage, yeah.
And, like, he'll embrace more of a, like, just stand in the corner and spot up.
Yeah.
Like that's no that's isolations, like, just stand in the corner, be ready for, you know, mm-hmm. Russ is going to drive and kick a lot, Paul George is going to drive and kick a lot. Yeah, and, like, then just, you know, Melo was just so bad on both ends that getting rid of him and adding a potential contributor in Schroeder.
Right.
Like, how do you not love this move for OKC? Yeah. Even if it, you know, even if Schroeder blows up in their face, it's still like between the financial savings, getting rid of Melo, getting a potential contributor, great move for OKC. Atlanta, I think, is the next question is, did they get enough for taking on Melo?
They got a pick, right?
Did they? I didn't see if they did. I saw they definitely got Justin Anderson. If they got a pick, I'm not entirely sure.
I believe they got a pick.
Okay.
Let me just, let's pull it up with
you. Yeah. Let's see.
Carmelo trade.
Yeah.
Because honestly, I don't remember every trade over this course of the summer.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I saw this. When did he get traded? Yeah, my first day here, I think, which is great.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
And we were planning for you, so.
Right. Oh, you're right. Oh, yeah, they sent the Thunder. Oh, the Thunder sent the 2022 protected first round pick. Yeah. We might have gotten the details wrong of the Kawhi trade. This one is protected 1-14 and becomes 2 second round picks if not traded. Right.
Yeah, because in the Kawhi trade, I think that's 2019.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Go back and mentally adjust for that one.
Yeah.
So it's 2022 protected first round pick. Lottery protected in 2022 becomes 2 second round picks if not conveyed that first year.
And I think that was the same deal with the Kawhi trade.
Okay. It was we got the year wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was the only thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, lottery protected first plus Justin Anderson for Carmelo. Is that enough?
I mean, the pick is going to convey. I think.
You think all of those guys are going to be off the books by then. Like, Paul George can come off in 2021, I believe.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And at that point in time.
I think Russ is signed. He's the only one. He's
34 at that point, though.
But yeah, like, we just don't know. I mean, I would think it will convey, but, like, we just have no idea. Because, Russ is the only player guaranteed to be under contract.
Yeah. No, that's because I'm just assuming those guys would just be there. But you're right.
Likely.
I mean, if they're not, and if things blow up in their face, like, that's different.
Yeah. Because, Adams ends after 2020, 2021.
Right.
And then Paul George can opt out.
Yeah.
And then, like, there was talk of him doing an extension beforehand. So, like, the likelihood is that it will convey. But who knows at this point.
But I don't think they were able to get more because of Schroeder.
Yeah.
Everybody knew, he was a mental case.
Right.
And I think there's considerable risk in taking him on.
Yes.
I think everyone knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And that just drove the price down.
Yep. Yeah. And that was the thing with, like, the Brooklyn trade, was it? Yeah, with the Fareed and Arthur.
Right.
Where they, like, dumped Jeremy Lin. So, like, technically they only saved, like, or they took on $20 million, but they dumped $12 million, so they only added $8 million. And this is, like, for Atlanta, you dumped Carmelo Anthony, so you took, or you added Carmelo Anthony, so you took 28, but you dumped right. Schroeder, so you dumped like 15 or 16, and then you got rid of Muscala as well. So they actually didn't add all that much in terms of salary this year. Also, who gives a shit? Because they weren't going to use it anyway. Yep. Or, like, there wasn't anyone they were going to use it on.
Right, they're rebuilding.
Right, so, like, getting a lotto protected first is fine, I guess. Like, whatever. There's decent upside there, especially given the uncertainty with OKC. And now, you know, we don't know when the one-and-dones are going to happen. But there was, like, some speculation that it might not be until 2022 instead of 2021. So... Right. Just, like, teams should just, in general, be accumulating picks.
For 2021 and 2022.
Right, those years. And just, like, you know, at that point, it's just a gamble on, like, when it's going to kick
that's
in.
That's light years ahead.
Yeah. But then, like, if you are lucky and if you get it in the right year, like, mm-hmm. that could be a very good pick. Even if it's in the 20s, you could get a player that should be in the teens. You know, if you get, like, the number 25 pick that year, you could get a player who has the talent of a mid-first rounder.
Right.
So... It's fine. Like, I think it's, especially given how down they seemed on Schroeder, as you said. Yeah. Like, you know, they added Jeremy Lin, which all but signaled, like, we are getting Dennis Schroeder out of our hair this year. Freeing that up and, like, yep. you know, Melo comes off the books after this year. Schroeder was signed for, I think, 3 more years. Having that freedom gives them more opportunities, you know, next summer, in the summer of 2020, I'm not saying that Atlanta is going to be a huge free agent destination, but
they have some flexibility.
Right, you can do this thing again. There's going to be, like, Luol Deng will be an expiring contract then. Mm-hmm. Ryan Anderson will be an expiring contract then. Yep. You can...
squeeze assets.
Right, just rent more cap space, whereas Schroeder would have been preventing mm-hmm. you from doing that.
Or sign Jabari Parker.
That's true. Yeah, I guess if his team option gets declined, he could... Yeah.
Yep.
Do you think Justin Anderson brings anything to the table in Atlanta, or is he just kind of like an end-of-the-bench guy?
End-of-the-bench guy, you know, initially.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel he's talented.
I agree.
He is extremely athletic. I feel he's got very great timing defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he could turn into something good.
Yeah.
He's still young. Like, he's not super young to 24?
Right. Yeah, somewhere like around there.
Yeah, it's 24, 25. But I feel he's an NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he just somehow got that goddamn jump shot down.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, because he's big, he's physical, he mm-hmm. can jump out the gym, he can actually fight on the glass when he wants to.
Yep.
And it's just, he seems to be a guy who just needs to find the right spot where he can develop on his own pace.
Yeah.
I don't know if OKC is that place. Or sorry, Atlanta. Yeah. Totally my fault.
Yeah.
Because they seem to be... not really looking at the overall results. They're just going to, mm-hmm. Asset accumulation.
Right.
And I don't know if they have the time or energy for a training, you know, the training staff to go in and work with him, like, from a detailed perspective.
Yeah.
Like, okay, let's get this settled. Let's get this settled.
Sure.
And also, he's up for, like, a new contract.
Yeah, after this year.
After this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it might behoove them to try to develop a small thing in him, but then kind of lay back a little bit and see if they can get him on, like, a minimum or a cheap deal.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they sign him to, like, I don't know, 2 years, $5 million or something, and then get, you know, unleash him.
Right. Because I believe he'll be restricted after this year, so that's going to chill his market anyway. Right.
And if he's not producing, like, who's going to offer him? Oh, right. Sorry, the Kings.
Yeah, most likely.
Okay. Yeah, the Kings are going to offer him, like, 2 years, $17 million.
Of course. I mean, I don't think Atlanta should, like, be printing a million Justin Anderson jerseys. Like, hold up, I'll buy your Hawks Anderson jerseys. But, yeah, like, he's a good flyer. Like, there's no risk involved. And, like, if he takes off, that's great. I mean, as you said, like, Torian Prince is going to be their main focus, main developmental focus at the forward spot. Anderson is a fine bench guy. I wouldn't expect him to play 30 plus minutes, but, like, on that
20,
yeah, probably,
or right. 10,
you know. yeah, but, like, on that Atlanta team that just doesn't have that many pieces that you're sure of,
right?
Whatever, it's fine. He's a good, like, bench body otherwise,
yeah, and he could become something, so it's fine. It's absolutely, and if he becomes something, like, Atlanta wins this trade, like, hands down,
yeah, right. So then let's close it out with the Philly aspect, because mm-hmm. they gave up on two young guys, TLC and Anderson. They got Mike Muscala.
Yeah.
It seems like this was just a reaction to the whole Bielitsa nonsense, mm-hmm. which is like he agreed to the room exception, backed out, said he was staying in Europe, then agreed to join the Kings instead. And so, you know, Philly was down the stretch four that they wanted.
Yeah.
And
you they know, need a shooter.
Yeah, I guess so. So do you think it was smart to give up on these bench guys for filling that role? You do not.
I do not. Like we just talked about, there is still some potential left in Justin Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one spot on Philly where you can still have, you know, a place to find something,
yeah.
it's probably at the forwards, especially if you play Ben at the
Definitely,
line.
Yeah.
So at the forward spots, I feel you kind of gave up a good chance because TLC plays like shooting guard, small forward. He's a wing.
Yeah.
Much like Justin Anderson, who's more of a 3 and 4.
Right.
But those two positions, like, those are the places where you can actually have a chance to carve out some minutes for guys and see yeah. what they can do.
Yeah.
So I feel that was a little bit short sighted. Muscala, at this point, I don't see him as a stretch four. I see him as strictly as a stretch five.
Yeah.
And I just don't really understand it. I mean, you're getting Jonah Bolden over.
Mm-hmm.
He actually signed, traded Rashawn Holmes. So Jonah Bolden could get his minutes.
Yep.
So, like, Muscala's not going to get a whole lot of minutes. And yeah, I was kind of like, I didn't get that. You gave up two guys, not with tremendous upside.
Right.
But some upside.
Right.
For a guy who was pretty much maxed out.
Yeah. I think first of all, Philly, as we've mentioned before, especially with Bolden, you know, he did come over, but, like, it was rumored that he was going to all year. So they were just at this, like, roster spot crunch. Like, they had too many guys signed to deals. Even before Bolden came, they had 16 guys. You could waive Bayless and get down to 15, but then if you sign Bolden, you're back up to 16. And if you use the room exception on anyone, you're back up to 17. So they were kind of screwed in a way. Like, they had to trim the fat somewhere. I thought Bayless, I still think Bayless is gone. Whether, you know, there's been reports that they're talking about trading him for Kyle Korver, which I don't understand why Cleveland would do it, but by all means, please do. And then, as you said, Rashawn got traded as well. But I think this was really just, they know, like, TLC, I agree, both of those guys, frankly, have upside. They know there wasn't really minutes for either guy.
Right.
And at that point, you're just like, you know, we've had these guys in our organization. The Nerlens trade brought Anderson over, so we've had him for a year and a half. We've had TLC for two.
And he's shown something, but not...
Yeah, yeah. Like there's upside there, but I'm not super confident that he taps into it. I think, you know, like, he just lacks that signature skill. Yep. Like, Furkan Korkmaz...
Shooting.
Right. So that kept him there over TLC. Mm-hmm. And then you bring in guys like, you know, you just... got Zaire Smith in the draft. You do got Landry Shamet in the draft. Like, there just weren't going to be minutes for all of these guys. So, yeah, like, it's a bummer to not get any draft compensation and just get, like, an expiring contract in Muscala. I'm curious to see if he, you know, if he gets minutes over Amir Johnson, because I agree he's better at the five than the four at this point. And I also agree that, like, if there is one position Philly could have gone without, like, you need a stretch four, but, like, you could have fudged it by having Dario fill some of those minutes.
Yep.
Wilson Chandler could have filled some of those minutes. Yep. Robert Covington could have slid
even
up.
Even TLC. Like, I know he's not a shooter, but, like, he can even play out a spot when he goes super small.
Yeah.
Justin Anderson certainly.
Anderson could have as well. Like, there are ways around it, but if you just felt like you needed, you know, this feels like kind of an insurance play for Embiid in a way, because,
yeah, that makes sense.
If Embiid goes down, God forbid, like, you don't, your season's over if you're trotting out Amir Johnson.
Well, you have
Jonah
Bolden.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Like, I know people are down on him because of the Summer League. Like, who gives a shit?
He's going to be good.
Fine. Yeah.
He's good. I mean, look, Summer League doesn't matter.
Right.
He's a guy who's going to get you shot blocking. He's going to get you steals. He's going to get you good passing. He's going to get you rebounds. He's going to get you 3-point shooting. I mean, I think I mentioned that, but he's going to give you a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah.
Jonah Bolden is a multifaceted player.
Right.
Like, people don't recognize that.
Yeah.
So he's going to be good. And that's partly why I was wondering about the Muscala thing, because I think TLC has a lot of potential left.
Yeah.
Like, I've mentioned that game against Houston before Houston.
Yeah.
Like, he set the world on fire for a couple of minutes, and you saw the whole repertoire. Like, he was hitting from outside, he was getting to the rim, and he was playing with confidence. The only thing here that was different from that game to others is usually he hesitated.
Right.
In Houston, for some reason, I don't know if he had, like, a good meal the night before or something, got late. I don't know.
Right.
But for some reason, that one game, like, he was just on top of the world.
Yeah.
He was feeling himself, and it worked. So for TLC, I feel it's way more mental than it is, like, skills-wise, because I think the skills are there.
Yeah.
He's got a great body.
Yep.
He's athletic.
Yep.
The release on his jump shot is sound and fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of just realizing that, dude, you actually have some game.
Right. He started a couple games when Redick got hurt. I think it was like late January. And he's strung together a few good games back to back. And he even said, like, there's something about starting and, like, knowing I'm not going to get pulled for the first mistake I make. So I think you're right. I think it is a confidence thing. And we'll see how he fares in OKC. I mean, there, as we discussed, there's going to be a need for wings off the bench in particular. He could fill that role. It wouldn't surprise me if he did well there.
Right. Future Spurs target for me.
Ooh, yeah. That's a good one.
I would love him there. Because of the international connection, but, like, they're even pretty thin on the forwards.
Box. Yes. Yeah. No, he's good. They're, like, him and Anderson are both competent NBA players. Yep. They're not going to, like, go to Europe next year. Like, they have a long-term future, whether it's a starter or an all-star caliber player. Starter, maybe all-star, no. But, like, they will be rotation guys for a while.
Right.
This is what it is. I think, like, none of these moves really change Philly's trajectory at all. Like, Anderson, if he had a future there, he would have gotten off the bench in that Boston series a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Like,
I agree.
And that was the thing with Rashawn, too. It was like, if he had a future in Philly, Brett Brown wouldn't have taken Amir Johnson over him. Like, prioritized Amir Johnson over
him. I hated that, but I get it.
The writing was on the wall for all of them. For Holmes, it was like, Philly had metrics that said, like, he's just... He puts up good numbers. He's, like, a good shot blocker. He puts up big numbers. But, like, he's just not defensively sound, fundamentally. Amir was much better in that role. So, basically swapping him from Jonah Bolden was just one guy's on 1 year. One guy's about to take a four-year deal. Like, the Hinkie special came back for Jonah Bolden.
Yeah. And Bolden has a higher ceiling.
Yeah, probably.
He does.
Yeah. I think Rashawn is also a good player. I'm excited to see what happens to him in Phoenix. I hope he latches on somewhere next year where he has an opportunity. But, yeah, like, all of these moves are very minor for Philly. Like,
yeah, they are. But it's still, like, at the end of the day, it's the inches
that makes
a difference.
Yeah.
And if TLC and Anderson turn into something.
Right.
Those could have been trade assets.
They could have been. So, yeah.
But again, you guys have a treasure trove, like with draft picks and stuff like that. But it's being emptied a little bit. Like, you don't have the same flexibility you had like 2 years ago.
No, absolutely not.
And that's why I think this was maybe not the best deal for you.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you're getting a first round pick for either of those guys.
No, like, obviously.
They have a million second round picks in the future already. Yeah. So.
And that's why I would prefer to at least hang on to TLC.
Yeah.
I get Anderson because he's up for a new contract.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's minor. I mean, it's not like you completely failed.
No.
Like, you didn't lose a trade like that in
that
sense. Right. It's just, you would have liked to see one of those guys stay
around. Yeah, like, you prefer to keep young players just because there's upside versus, like, the known quantity in Muscala. But this frees up a little bit more cap space for them next year because TLC was still signed through 2019-2020, so...
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not too upset about it, but I'm also not, like, I'm not sounding the alarm and saying they're going to be the number one seed in the East because they now have Mike Muscala. This is whatever.
Right.
They'll be fine. So I think that'll do it, Mort.
Yep.
Thank you all for listening to our live pod today. We will go back to being on Skype because I go back to the States on Friday. We will save a bunch of discussion of all the recent signings, Marcus Smart, and then Melo going to Houston, Beasley, Alex Len, Montrezl Harrell, whatever the hell the Kings are doing. We'll save all that for the weekend. Until then, please follow us on Twitter, @TheNBAPod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. So check them out on Twitter @AlmightyCasts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morton Jensen.
And his kitchen.
In his kitchen. I would say have a good one, Mort, but we're about to go have a good one.
We're about to go have a good one. We're going to Tivoli. Yeah.
We are going to Tivoli. So until next time, everyone, have a good week.